Well, good morning, Fairhaven. Let's try that in all of our campuses. Let's try that again, as if like you got a little bit of a nice sleep in all of our Springboro, Northmont, Classics. Help me out here. Good morning, everybody. There we go. Great to see you. Hey, would you help me by applause welcome all of our campuses? You get to welcome each other and help me thank those that are online with us right now. Just help me welcome them if you would. Thank you for joining us online. It's awesome. If you're new here today, in all of our campuses, we are in week three of a series that we're calling Inner View. Because we're in a series and we're flipping the script because we're looking at questions that Jesus has for us. Many of us have questions for Jesus in our life as we go through life, and we have situations and circumstances, and we're single or we're married or we have kids or whatever it might be in your life, we have questions. But we're flipping the script, and in this series, we're looking at questions that Jesus asks us, and the reality is these questions are there because Jesus wants us to take an inner view of our lives and to go below the surface. Some of the questions at surface level are pretty easy to answer, like the one we did 2 weeks ago where Jesus asked, what do you want? Like, what do you want in your life? I mean, at the surface, many of us could answer that real quickly. I need this, I need that, you know, some things are going on in your life. It's a pretty easy question to answer, and yet when you really look at the question in the context of what Jesus was asking, it can go deeper and deeper in our lives. Last week, we looked at a question that every one of us deals with, and so if you weren't here, I really encourage you to go back and follow along, because this is what Jesus asks of every single person, whether you're 8 years of age or 80 years of age or anywhere in between that or beyond that, he asks this question. Why worry? Like, why do you worry? And so what we're doing in this question is we're saying, what would it be like if we sat in a chair, maybe something like this, a little white chair, and we were to listen to the questions that Jesus asks of us and then respond? And the response can be immediate. The response can be in your small groups. The response can be throughout the week. We really hope that you'll take a look at these questions and take them seriously. Now, let me tell you, here's why we're doing this series, questions that Jesus asked, because you don't accidentally grow. You don't accidentally deepen in your walk with God. It doesn't happen just by osmosis. It doesn't happen by simply, you know, you just coming and just sort of being a non-participant, whether it's in a worship service or a Bible study or anything else. It doesn't happen accidentally. You and I have to actually do a few things, but here's the key. It is not up to us. God then, by his power inside of us, helps us to grow and deepen in our walk with him. In other words, you can look more and more like Jesus every day. In your actions, in your attitudes, but it doesn't happen accidentally. You and I have to hear the questions that Jesus asks, and then we have to think about them on the inside. We have to have, well, an inner view, and we have to figure out what Jesus is asking. Jesus is really using what is known as the Socratic process. When Jesus asks us questions, what he's really doing here is using what rabbis and teachers did in the first century. In fact, even before that, the Socratic process came from Socrates. And this process is really a process of questions where you answer questions that are posed to you. That's what the Socratic process is, where somebody poses a question to you. And sometimes the question is at the surface level, pretty easy. But if you think about the question, it can go deeper and deeper and deeper. And that's what we're trying to do in this process, is hear the questions that Jesus asked as we, you know, sort of look at a little white chair and say, if we were sitting there and Jesus were having a conversation with us, chances are he would tell you a story, and somewhere in that story he would either ask a question to begin the story, or he would tell you the story and then ask you a question, or he would tell the story and in the middle of the story he would ask you the question. Because we're finding that that's the case in most of these questions that Jesus asked. See, the Socratic process is a process where you do some critical thinking. You actually have to not check your brains at the door. You actually have to think through this process. You actually have to desire in your life that you want God to do something inside of you. You have to want that. He's not going to force it on you. You have to want that, maybe because you see in your own life it's not working on your own, Or maybe because you just desire that in your life, or maybe because you've watched somebody in your life who's made that change, and you're like, I want to be like that guy. I want to be like that lady. And so it's really about critical thinking in our lives. It is really, again, it's about taking, well, an inner view. That's why we're calling this series Inner View. We want to take a look on the inside, and we want to listen to the questions that Jesus asked. So what Jesus does is he engages the Socratic process. He asks questions. And like I said, we've already looked at two of them, and there are many, but you know, I just picked these four because I believe these four can really be game changer for us in our lives. This question, though, as I show you the question, if I just give you the question, at the surface level, it'll make no sense. The other questions that we looked at have. But on the surface level, if I just ask you this question that Jesus asks of us, it doesn't make any sense. So let me give you the question, and then we'll explain it, and then we'll look in Scripture and see what the context really is. Jesus asked this question, where are they? And some of us are like, well, they who? And who is they? And am I they? Are you they? And we're going to find the answer to that. This is a powerful question here when you read this question in the context of a story that is told to us by John. What Jesus is doing here, don't miss this, what Jesus is doing here through this question, he's displaying for us the power of being forgiven. How many of you, by raised hand, in every one of our environments, Classic, Springboro, Northmont, right here in Centerville, how many of you have ever heard a talk or a message or a sermon on the fact that you ought to forgive somebody? Can I just see your hands? Just raise them up high, and I want you to look around in all of our environments as I look around. That's pretty much all of us, okay? How many of you in the last year, in the last 2 years, have heard a talk or a message or a sermon about the fact that you can be forgiven? Right? It's fewer. It's fewer, right? Many hands have gone up, but it's still fewer. Because we often talk about how you and I ought to forgive, that you and I should forgive, that there are people in our lives that we need to forgive, and that is right. But we can't get there until we start here. We can't give away what you don't have. And so what we're going to be talking about is being forgiven. And I want us to focus this whole talk, this whole message, on the fact that you can be forgiven. And I want you to see the power of what being forgiven can do for you in your life, can do for your relationships, can do for the things that are happening in your life. And from that, as a foundation in your life, everything changes. I mean, this is a game changer when you begin to realize that being forgiven is the basis of how we operate in our lives and live out our lives in everything that we're doing. So I really hope you brought a Bible or some device because I want you to see this story. Chances are you've heard this story before. It's in John. John is one of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and then John. It's in the New Testament. And John chapter 8, there's a story in there. I say it's, in my own personal opinion, it's one of the most dramatic stories, I think, in all of the Bible. It's certainly a story that is engaging. There's a lot of drama in this story. The main characters in this story are a bunch of people, but really it's really two people, Jesus and this lady. And there's lots of questions that come up about that as well. But let me read the story for you, and then we're going to process this out a little bit. And we're going to, from this story, we're going to talk today about what it means to be forgiven and the power of that in your life and in my life. So let me read the story. You probably have heard it, but here it is, John chapter 8, verse 1. It says, but Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. Jesus was in chapter 7. He was in Jerusalem, and he went over to the Mount of Olives, which is across the valley. And if you've ever been to Israel, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Or if you've ever seen a picture of Jerusalem with the dome, you know what I'm talking about, that gold dome. Most of the times, the pictures that you see of Jerusalem in that gold dome is taken from the Mount of Olives, because that's where you can see it the best. And I've stood there, and several of you have done that as we've had trips, which we, by the way, have another one in March. And so John chapter 8, verse 1, Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. At dawn, it says, he appeared again in the temple courts where all the people gathered around him, and he sat down to teach them. The teachers of the law and Pharisees brought a woman caught in adultery. Like she was caught. They made her stand before the group and said to Jesus, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now, what do you say?" They were using this question as a trap in order to have a basis for accusing him. But Jesus, John says, Jesus bent down and he started to write on the ground with his finger. And when they kept on questioning him, he straightened up, or if you want to write in your Bibles, he stood up. That's what it means. He stood back up. He straightened up and said to them, "Let any one of you who is without sin, or let any one of you who doesn't have any wrong in your life, be the first to throw a stone at her." And this is the first time we're introduced to stoning in this story, because that's the Old Testament law, and I'll tell you that in just a second. Verse 8, again he stooped down, so then Jesus stooped back down and wrote on the ground. At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left with the woman standing there. Jesus straightened back up, so he stood back up, and asked her, "Woman, where are they?" There it is. There's the question. Where are they? Where are they? We're going to dive into that question. Where are they? "Has no one condemned you?" Verse 11, "No one, sir," she said. "Then neither do I condemn you," Jesus declared. "Go now and leave your life of sin." Man, what a dramatic story. I mean, it's an amazing, amazing story. Amazing for this woman, amazing for us, because every single one of us can see ourselves in this story. And I want to talk with you over the next few minutes about being forgiven and the power of that in our lives based on this story here and all that takes place in this story. So Jesus is on the Mount of Olives, and he goes back into the temple courts. In the temple courts in Jerusalem, there were lots of people milling around, but because Jesus had been doing a few things and miracles had been happening, people began to gather around him, and they called him teacher or rabbi. And rabbis, as I said, use the Socratic process. They use lots of questions, and in fact, if they're asked a question, they would respond with a question, which, you know, you're not supposed to do that really, but they do because that's the process, and it's really awesome because as you think about the question, it begins changing some things in your life. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, this group comes up, and we don't know how big the group is, but I just can imagine like 15, 20, you know, of these leaders that are, you know, all dressed up, and they look awesome, and they know the law, and I mean, they're the spiritual ones of the group, and they bring this lady, and I just can imagine that they're just dragging her in, and you can just look into her face. In fact, I want you to look into her face right now, and you can see the shame, and you can see the embarrassment. And you can just see that she's being used as a pawn in some Ponzi scheme here where the teachers of the law are going to try to catch Jesus in the middle of Rome and the Old Testament, and, you know, can they not? And they brought this woman in, and the law, you may want to write this down, Leviticus chapter 20, the law, verse 10, the law says that if you're caught in adultery, you are to be put to death, and the way you're to be put to death is by a stoning. If you go to Israel, it makes sense because in Israel, being a desert, you know, sort of a dry area, there are stones everywhere. There's rocks everywhere. There's dirt everywhere. There's dust everywhere, you know, which begins to make a lot of sense with a lot of the stories that we read. And it says they dragged this woman in and they threw her in front of Jesus and said, "We caught her." And in the original language, what it means is, they actually either walked into the room, or they saw into the room, or they burst into the room, and she was caught in the middle of an act. And they said, "What are you going to do?" Because the law says she's got to die. She needs to be stoned. And so Jesus bends down. He actually goes to his knees, and he writes in the dirt, and scholars have no idea. There's no extra biblical history books to tell us. Nobody really knows. We can surmise. Maybe he wrote down the names of every one of the guys that brought her in. Meaning, like, I know exactly who all of you are. Or maybe he wrote down all the wrong that had been done without any names, and the guys, as they kind of peered over, go, "Oh, that's mine there." Maybe he wrote down all those things. And what it tells us there is that they came to stone her, and Jesus then stands back up and looks them in the eye and says, if you have nothing wrong in your life, then go ahead, throw the first stone. And the story tells us that they began to peel off the older ones first. Now, why would the older ones leave first? I'll tell you why, because they're smarter. They have a lot more experience in life, am I right? Help me out here, right? So if you're 13 years of age, I got good news for you. There are people all around you that are older, that have been where you've been, and we can help you. We can actually help you. And if you're 30, good news, there's people in their 50s, and they've been there, they can help you. If you're in your 60s, we have people in our 80s, there's even people in their 90s. See, the older ones peel away because they knew, they've experienced life, and they knew, and they walked away. And I'm just imagining that behind these, you know, well-dressed guys and this woman who is thrown there in the middle of the whole thing, that there's young guys in the back. And as the old guys start going home, they're like, what's going on? What's going on? Like, what's the deal? And I can just imagine one of the old guys saying, just shut up and go home. You're not going to be able to win this one. Just go home. This is not going to, you know. And here this woman is, and I guarantee you, as they're all gathered around her, I can just imagine in my mind, they probably didn't have stones that look like this. You know, stonings don't happen with rocks like this, right? I mean, if I threw this at you, I would have to throw it really, really well, because there is a story in the Bible, I don't know if you've heard of it or not, where there was a stone that hit a guy in the head and he died. He was a big guy too. Know that story? David and Goliath? Yeah. So stones can kill you. If I threw this at the right speed and the right, you know, it might kill you, but chances are it'd take a lot of these little stones to kill somebody. So this is not the stone I want you to have in your mind today, because we're going to be talking about stones for just a little bit, because I think the idea of the visual idea is pretty powerful. I don't think it's that stone at all. I want you to get in your mind and imagine a stone like this, because I'm going to come back to this. Because at the very end, I want to put a stone in your hand, like this size of a stone. And I want you to imagine a stone like this. And I want you to imagine that all these guys that brought this woman in, they came not only prepared because they wanted to catch her in the act. So these people were prepared. They were prepared. But they were also so prepared that I have a feeling that all in their well-dressed suits, they probably had a stone in their hand. Like, I'm ready to go. Bring it on. And Jesus said, if there's anything wrong in your life, go ahead, throw the first stone. And they peel away. And they leave the woman there with Jesus. And I picture this eyeball-to-eyeball conversation that Jesus has. He stoops down and he writes again on the ground. I don't know, maybe he wrote some other things that were happening in her life. Maybe he wrote words of forgiveness. Nobody knows. But he stands back up and he looks her right in the eye and he says, where are they? Where are they? Where are those that accuse you? Where are they? Pretty powerful question. But the most powerful part of the story is verse 11. Because if we quit at verse 10, it's still a dramatic story. Like, wow, I mean, she got away with it, right? Jesus rescued her. That's awesome. But verse 11 is the power that we find in the forgiveness. Take a look at it again. Verse 11, here's what happens. She says, no one, sir, to the question, who's condemning you? No one. And then Jesus says, neither do I condemn you. But then he says this, watch this. Go now and leave it. Go now and leave it. Wow, that's powerful. Let me make some observations from this story about forgiveness, because I want to talk with you today about forgiveness, about how you can experience forgiveness in your life. I want to talk about being forgiven. I don't want to do a message on you forgiving somebody else. I'll get to that at the very end, because that's a byproduct of understanding that you're forgiven in your life. In fact, I want you to hear throughout this whole message, you are forgiven, all right? In all of our campuses, Springboro, you are forgiven. And in Northmont, I want you to just remember this, you are forgiven. Here at Centerville, Classics, okay? In fact, let's say it out loud. If you are in a relationship with God through Jesus Christ, if you've recognized that you're caught in the act, which all of us are, You're caught in the act, even if there's things in your life that nobody else knows. God knows. You're caught in the act. And in the process of that, the wrong in your life can be separated from you, and you are forgiven. So let's say it in all of our campuses, all together. I want you to participate here, and I want you to say it as loud as you want. And in fact, if there's a list in your life that's really, really long, I would say it louder if I were you, because it just reminds you of the fact that no matter what was written on the dirt for your life, you are forgiven. And so let's say it together, all the three of us, all the campuses, I am forgiven. Here we go. Ready? I am. You get that, and it'll change so much of your life. So much. See, when Jesus says, "Where are they?" At first level, at the surface level, rather, it's kind of an odd question. Like, where are their accusers? Here's why. They're everywhere. You and I have accusers everywhere. There are always accusers in your life. Am I right? There are people all around you that will accuse you. And this is a profound question, because not only is Jesus asking this woman as these men peel away, there's a deeper question that he's asking here, because he wants her to be able to answer it as he wants you and I to be able to answer this. And so, you see, the teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought in this woman who was caught in the act. Again, we are all caught in the act. I could tell you story after story in my life, you know, where I was caught in the act, and God knows about it, and, you know, something happened here, a little lie there, a little cheating here, a little, you know, a little something happening over here, and we're all caught in the act. And the reality is, being caught in the act is only the beginning act of the story. I mean, there's so much more to the story. See, we can be forgiven. Through Jesus Christ, I am forgiven, but there are always accusers. Let me list them out for you, okay, just for the sake of argument and discussion here today, because there's always accusers out there. So at the level, at the surface level, when Jesus says, "Where are they?" I can say, they're everywhere. You see, the first accuser in your life is, well, it's you. We are one of our biggest accusers. When you look yourself in the mirror, you and I are the biggest accusers of ourselves because of guilt. And you know, the reality is, if you are in a relationship with Jesus Christ, if you're a Christ follower, and this week you got up every single morning and said, "I am forgiven," it might change the way you see yourself in the mirror. Because guilt is something that weighs you down and it destroys you, and God does not want us to live with guilt. If he paid a price, which was the ultimate price, he does not want you and I to be the accusers of our own hearts, right? And yet, so many times, the first person we can look to is us. Here's the second person, the enemy. I mean, the Bible tells us in Revelation chapter 12 that the enemy of your soul, Satan, if you want to call him, the devil, however you want to call him, there is a spiritual battle out there in the world for your life. And in that spiritual battle, Revelation 12 tells us that he is the accuser. The enemy does not know what you're thinking. He cannot read your mind. He does not have all power to know everything in your life. But what he can do is, the minute you think a thought, he can take that thought, he can twist it, he can flip the script, if you will, and he can begin to accuse you. He is called the accuser. And he begins to question your identity, where God can't love you because of that. I mean, no one would really be accepting of you because of that. And on it goes. And so we see that the enemy is one of the accusers in our life. Here's a third one, interestingly enough. It's the hypocrites. Now, we got to define this, because this is really interesting, because the word hypocrites is something that people don't really understand. So if you're here and you're a guest, or if you've got people that have called you that, let me make sure that it's very clear. If you call yourself a Christ follower and you do something wrong, that does not make you a hypocrite. That makes you human. Okay? Here's what a hypocrite is. A hypocrite is someone who judges someone for this when they live it themselves. You see what I'm saying? That's a hypocrite. A hypocrite, secondly, is a person who says that I don't want to do this in my life, and yet you do it over and over and over and over again, and you live life doing the thing that you don't want to do or doing the thing that you shouldn't do in your life for a long period of time. That's being hypocritical to your own heart, right? And it's very important that we understand that. And there are hypocrites out there, and they will be accusers. They will accuse you of all kinds of things in life. And so when Jesus says, where are they? I can say, well, they're everywhere. I mean, it's me, it's the enemy, it's this. And then here's the last one, it's the world. And here's interesting, the world around us turns it backwards. The world doesn't accuse you of doing anything wrong. What the world says, all the things that you do wrong, it's normal. Everybody does it. I mean, it's just about tolerance. And so don't worry about it. And in fact, that is an accuser to your soul. So the first thought I want you to think about today as you think about the fact that I am forgiven is that when it comes to forgiving, there are all kinds of accusers around us. Now, if I stop right here, that'd be really hard. We would leave here confused, like, wait a minute, I'm forgiven, but I got all kinds of accusers. Man, that sounds like a battle every day, and who wants that battle in life, right? So we need to take a look at the second thing about being forgiven. Here's the second idea, if you will, about being forgiven, and that's this, that we are all in trouble. How many of you ladies, as you hear this story read, are thinking, where's the guy? Help me out here, ladies, right? Like, where's the guy here? And I'll tell you, the guy is not in the story, but he's in the story because Leviticus chapter 20, verse 10 says that if adultery happens, both the man and the woman are to die, they are to be stoned. And so even more so why the story here is important for us to read and to understand that the woman represents, not women, the woman represents all of us. We're all caught in the act. It's amazing. I mean, in this story, here's this woman, and she gets caught, and all of a sudden, we recognize something, that it's about all of us. We're all in trouble. Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. What do you say? Watch this. If Jesus said, stone her and kill her, Jesus would be in trouble with Rome. Because Rome would say, look, you don't have that power, you don't have that authority, you can't murder people, even though they did. So if Jesus, you know, said, go ahead and stone her, that's a problem. And if Jesus says, no, let's not stone her, let's forgive her, then they could say, oh, so the law is not important? I guess the law is not important. So that's why they were trying to trap Jesus. And Jesus, in his infinite wisdom, says, is there any of you that doesn't have any wrong in your life? Then you throw it. You throw it. Meaning, when we think about being forgiven, we have to remember that we're all in trouble. In your small groups or community groups, I really encourage you to go to Romans chapter 3 if you want. You can write it down and read it, but let me just paraphrase it for you because these words are so very important. There's a progression, and I want you to see the progression, and for some of you, I want you to rehearse this progression because I want you to be encouraged. For others of you, you may go through the progression and say, oh my gosh, I'm only about halfway through that. Some of you might say, I've gotten all the way down to the bottom except the last two, and that's really hard, and I need to think this through. And so no matter where you're at in your life, this is really good for you because here's the progression. Because we're all in trouble. Here's what Romans 3 says. We are all justly accused. Question, was this woman justly accused of adultery? Yes or no? And the answer, church, is yes. She was caught in the act. You are caught in the act. I am caught in the act. And so first thing that Paul tells us, because remember, Paul was caught in the act, and his life was transformed because of being forgiven. His whole life changed. His name changed. His career changed. The way he lived out his life changed. And Paul is writing this down, and he says, all of us are justly accused. In other words, there's not a few of us that are better than other people. We're all in trouble, okay? You get that? And then he goes on and he says this, but every one of us should be stoned. Every single person here within hearing of my voice in all of our campuses, we're all at the same spot. You should be stoned because of what's going on in your life and my life. But Paul doesn't stop there. He goes on in this process. We're all justly accused. We all should be stoned. Thirdly, he says, but no one is justified by doing good. In other words, you can't get out of the bad in your life by just doing more good. You can't do enough good to get rid of all that in your life that causes you to be deserving of a stoning because you are accused. And so he goes on from there. Fourthly, he says, so Jesus, here's what Jesus does. Jesus sets us up free from a death sentence. He gives us freedom. So when we talk about freedom, freedom is amazing when you realize that your heart is free. Now, stop and think for a minute. It's from a position of freedom that you and I can love those who hate us. We can love those who accuse us. We can love those who are hypocritical around us. We can do all the right things. It's on the basis of our freedom. But Paul doesn't stop there. He says, but freedom comes only by faith. In other words, you have to come to the place of saying, you know what, I need that, I want that, I'm caught, I don't want to be stoned. So Jesus can do something about that for you. And he offers a gift. All you have to do is take it in your life. And it comes only by faith, by believing, and we then owe him our entire lives. Like, it's not by accident that Jesus says, now go now and live differently. That's what he says to this woman. Go now and live differently. That makes a huge, huge difference. This is the progression here. And at the end of this message here today, this talk on all of our campuses, I'm going to give you the opportunity because you might say, you know what, I understand as far as this, but I understand that I could have this, but I'm not sure I'm really free from a death sentence. I'm not sure today if I died that I would really be free from a death sentence if I met Jesus. And all along here, you can see yourself wherever you're at in that progression. And at the very end, I'm going to just give you, like we always do, take you 2 minutes in all of our campuses, and you can take 2 minutes and just be silent, and you can take those 2 minutes and you can say, you know what, I want to make sure I'm free. And you can just say, Jesus, I invite you into my life today. I want that freedom. You caught me. I want to be free. And it's from that freedom that you can begin to live. And it's a game changer. And what I'm going to ask you to do is just take that tear it off and just put at the top, I am forgiven. Give us your name and email address and we'll get to you. We want to answer questions. We want to talk with you. We want to celebrate it. We're not going to do anything weird or strange. But being forgiven, I mean, we're all in trouble. Here's the third thing, okay? Here's the third thing about being forgiven. The third thing is that Jesus stands with us. See, I don't know if you noticed or not, but twice in the story, verse 7 and verse 10, it says that Jesus knelt down and then he straightened up. And he knelt down and he straightened up. Let me tell you why. Because he knelt down, which is a symbol of servanthood. So he knelt down to be able to communicate to all these lawyers and guys that are spiritual and the Pharisees that I'm willing to take the servant role as you're trying to trap me, servant role, but then he stands up. And when he stands up as the Son of God. He stands up as the one that knows everything. He stands up as the one all-knowing. And then he knelt back down because they'd all left, and he knelt back down, and he comes as a servant to this woman who was caught in the act with shame and guilt and all kinds. She knelt down as a servant, and then he stands back up as the one who can forgive her and says, go. Go now and change the way you live. See, when Jesus stands with us, we are never alone. So you see, the accusers in your life, here's what happens. This is interesting. Our accusers leave. When you can get up in the morning, your feet hit the ground, you can say to yourself, I am forgiven. And it's because of that then that you can act and do things that you never thought you could do because I am forgiven. And in that, the accusers leave. Parents, as you may feel guilty about maybe some of the things that you've done as parents, that's hard. I'm a parent. I need to be reminded. I am forgiven. And so you know what I can do? I can try to do better. I can ask God to help me to be better. But I don't need to live with the guilt. If you're single and you're living with guilt and accusers are all around you, if you're in high school and the peer pressure is too much, there's something you can do about it. We'll talk about that in a second. Thirdly, Jesus stands with us and we are not accused, we're only forgiven. We are not accused. When Jesus stands with us, when he stands for you, we are not the accused any longer, we are only forgiven. Now, it's about there that a church with this many people and all these different campuses ought to probably respond with probably amen, right? And so I want to try it, not because I'm looking for a cheap golf clap, but because I want you to recognize it in your own life that if there's a statement that is made about your life that would cause you to want to respond, it's probably right here. Okay, so let me try it. I'm going to say it, and you get to respond if you want to, okay? Here it is. Jesus says that you're not accused, you're only forgiven. Amen. Yeah, that's right there. Because Jesus stands with us. And that way, we're free. We're free. There's one more thing, though. Here's the fourth thing. And then this is it. And then I'm going to end with one statement and one question. Here's the last one. Because we're forgiven in this story, it demands a more excellent way. Here's what Jesus says. Go now and leave your life of sin. See, it calls for a more excellent way. If you say, I am forgiven, that demands in your life a more excellent way. You are free to walk a different path. You have the freedom in your life because you are forgiven and the power of God in your life that you can walk a different path. You can walk away from that addiction. You can walk away from that habit. You can walk away from those comments that you're making to your spouse. You can walk away from the fear of a job. You can walk away from all those things in your life because you are forgiven and Jesus stands with you. The accusers leave and all you hear is, go now. Go now and be free. And see, it demands a more excellent way, which means that we're loved for a better tomorrow. Jesus loves you that much that he wants to give you a better tomorrow. That's what freedom is all about, a better tomorrow. Being free means a better tomorrow. And then we introduce the subject of forgiving others. But I want to introduce it in a very different way. We can drop the rock. You see, today, some of you need to be set free. Some of you need to stop hearing yourself say over and over and over again to remind you of the things that you've done wrong. You need to drop the rock because you're stoning yourself. Some of you need to be free of a past in your life that continues to haunt you. You know you're forgiven. That's something you know in your head. The problem is your past haunts you over and over and over and over again. And Jesus would say to you, no one is condemning you, and neither do I. So leave it. Go now and leave it. Leave the past. Draw a line. Drop the rock. Or it might mean that today you think of the people in your life who have hurt you and are hurting you perhaps, and here's what you can do. You can be a person of forgiveness, but it starts with being forgiven, that once you understand that you are forgiven, then you can drop the rock. And dropping the rock is a powerful force in your life. Let me say it this way. You see, freedom by being forgiven is an indescribable force. It's a game changer. That's exactly why Jesus says, where are they? Where are they? I am forgiven. Probably the best three words that you could say to yourself. I'm going to invite you just to bow your heads. And if you're here today and you don't know that forgiveness, you can know that today. Nothing strange or weird. I'm going to turn it over to the campus pastors in just a second. And all I want you to do is just quiet your heart. And I just want you to reflect on being forgiven. Or I want you to just pray a prayer. If you're not sure, Jesus, come into my life. I accept your forgiveness. Change me. And then go and leave it. That's how powerful this is. Let's just take 2 minutes.